Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
This is DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg.
Baseball's semblance of normalcy, and Jesse Rogers, ESPN.com. And he's breaking a lot of stories. You know, when you notice these stories now, guys, all of a sudden it's like passing to Jesse Rogers. He's very much involved, so we're really happy to have you on the show, Jesse. Let's start out. How close, I guess, in your mind, and there's a lot of machinations here, how close in your mind are we to an agreement with the owners and the players that baseball, in one way or another, does return at some point this summer?
What's normalcy, guys, by the way? Not very close. Not very close. And here's the bad news, and it's wrapped up in a small amount of good news. The optimism anybody will tell you about is simply because the alternative is so devastating, not playing at all this year. You see what I'm saying? Like, there's no middle ground just yet that you can point to, although I wrote a little bit about it today at ESPN.com. There's no real middle ground you can point to. You can't ask an agent. Agents can't see it. Players can't see it. I mean, they can see it from their side, what they want. But that middle ground that normally you can find in a negotiation, no one can see it just yet. But the alternative is so bad that everyone is still hopeful it can get done. But they are definitely miles apart.
Jesse, can you explain to me, where is the disconnect? I mean, I understand the players are taking on 100% of the health risk, so they feel like they should be paid, you know, whatever the games are. I mean, so it would be, right. I mean, initially, 50%, so for the 82 games. But, I mean, in that email, I mean, it seems pretty clear that if there's no fans in seats, that they would have to renegotiate how much the players would be paid. Where's the disconnect between the sides?
Well, okay, so two things. Let me address that. You're talking about the email that was leaked and the March agreement, right?
Yep.
Well, I've seen that agreement, and yes, they said we will discuss again, but it is still ambiguous. The fact that they would leave that ambiguous, and this lawyers, people outside the business have said the same when I've described it to them. I mean, they should have had that explicit. Here's what happens if we have fans. Here's what happens if we don't. And each should have been about five pages. That wasn't the case. The fact that email only enhances the idea that there was confusion. Like, why did they even need to send an email saying, hey, are we still talking about this later on? And yes, I guess the ownership group said yes. But the fact that they had to do that is confusing. I mean, this agreement is ambiguous. So let's start with that. Big, big mistake on both sides. I mean, the problems are layered, and a lot of them have to do with the future. I've said probably on 15 radio shows in the last week, if this was the first or second year of a new CBA, things might be different. But with that negotiation looming, and of course one more free agent season coming up before that CBA, there's a lot of paranoia on the players' part, basically thinking whatever they give into now is going to carry over to the offseason and the next CBA. And also the fact that they think they're going to end up getting screwed one way or another this offseason anyway, and potentially next CBA anyway. I've already talked to people on the owner's side that are worried about what the revenues will look like in 2021. So with all this uncertainty in the coming years, things the players can't control, you know, like Mookie Betts is going to be a free agent. At that point, he's beholden to the people holding the purse strings, right? But right now, Mookie Betts has a negotiated salaried contract as part of a union and a collective bargaining agreement, and also an agreement on top of that in late March, the players believe, that says they'll be paid prorated salary. See what I'm saying? Like, they want the guarantee now because they know the future is uncertain no matter what they're paid. So there's layers to it, and also the mistrust going back these last few years. I mean, the free agent winners that have been down for anybody below the top guys. A lot of paranoia, a lot of mistrust. It's all baked into the process here. Remember, the NBA, the NHL, they're partners with their players, right? 50% splits, and the NFL as well. There's no real partnership here with the players, and that's probably coming back to haunt both groups right now.
Jesse, in the article that you've got up on the.com, you dived into the players' proposal in response to the owner's proposal that came out a couple of weeks ago, and it seems as if the players put out the fact that they're willing to pay a 114-game schedule under the assumption that if you played more games, then the owners would have a chance to make more money. But you said that that's not necessarily the owner's position. Can you expound on that a little bit?
I mean, the owners say playing more has them losing more because of payrolls. If they're going to pay the full prorated salary, and owner side, on the owner side, yeah, they don't open their books, which is a problem. They claim that they will, but you know, money can be hidden. Now, the one thing, and maybe this has been under talked about, and I am not, you know, I didn't get into this business to talk about contracts and dollars and cents. I like watching home runs. So the Atlanta Braves are a publicly traded company. Okay, their books are the only books in sports, I think, but definitely in baseball, that are public. You can look at the Atlanta Braves. Now, why am I getting at that? The Atlanta Braves, according to their books, garner 63% of their revenue through game day ticket sales and things around the ballpark, which is minimal, but mostly ticket sales and concessions and parking and stuff like that. 63%. So that is baseball saying, look, we have proof here. A majority of our monies, especially in the bigger markets, come from game day sales, ticket sales and the like. And so if you're taking away 63, the Cubs here in Chicago say it's 70% for them because they don't have a huge TV deal just yet. They're starting their own network. If you take that away, we've got nothing. We don't have much left. So that's what the owners are arguing on that side. Like we don't have a lot left if you're taking away the game day experience. Now, what I wrote in that piece, I don't think has been talked about enough. The D word, I call it, deferrals. It finally came up in the players' proposal to play 114 games, though they made a major caveat. They only would take deferrals if the postseason is canceled. I think deferrals is the middle ground, guys. I mean, people, the players need to understand there is a little bit of a cash flow problem this year. So, look, to play 82 games, take 50% of your prorated salary right now, and a promise, obviously in writing, to get the rest of your salaries in the next couple years. The only pushback from ownership I've heard is that, well, that's tough because the bill still comes due. Well, you know what? Your revenues are going to return at some point. Fans will be back in there. So, yeah, you may have to pay double in the coming years, but raise the ticket prices, which is probably what they'll, you know, find a way to pay it. I mean, frankly, they can pay it now. Get a loan. Ask for minority investors to give them more money, more equity in the team. So, to me, there is a middle ground, and I think deferrals is a big part of it. And I will tell you this, last thing, I haven't talked to a player or an agent that wouldn't be willing to listen on deferrals and more than just if the postseason is canceled.
Interesting stuff. Jesse Rogers with us here, ESPN.com writer, all over the place as far as the baseball is concerned on 98.7 ESPN. So we have this story yesterday, 40, 50 games potentially, and then guys getting prorated salaries. Jesse, is it realistic to think, because listen, we'll take anything now, but is it realistic to think that we're going to see a 45-game regular season in baseball?
No, it really isn't. And immediately the PA sent an email when that story leaked. They sent an email to the entire unionship, 1,200 players, whatever it is, and said, disregard that. That is not on the table. That they haven't offered that, and we don't think they will. It's kind of the nuclear option. Because apparently, and this is a little ambiguous too, Manfred can just implement that. But the Players Association, it's almost a non-starter. And I wrote it in the piece. I mean, 40 games, guys are not going to risk their arms to play 40 games, right? And not only that, star players, first of all, we're going to have more injuries because just the way this season is going to play out. And your star player has a hamstring. You know how long hamstrings take, Rick? That's 4 to 6 weeks. That's the season, basically. So are guys going to rush back, or are they going to completely shut it down? Because what are they playing for? There's no way that 40 to 45. There's so many layers to it. I had a player say, and I know this is silly, but he's like, how am I supposed to get a 40-day lease in an apartment? You know, a guy that lives now in the offseason in Arizona, he's got to come to Chicago. You know, they got the money. Well, they may not have the money. We don't know. But just all these little things pop up and big things, mostly related to injuries. I think it's got to be like 70, 60, 70, 80 for the players to really get up and go through this. Plus, to jump through the hoops to play and execute this with the testing. You going to do it for 40 games and playoffs? I don't think so.
Jesse, how concerned are owners about a second wave of COVID? I mean, how much does that play into into this, you know, most recent, and it hasn't been proposed yet, but, you know, trying to keep the games down so they can at least get the postseason in the World Series in?
It's definitely part of it, but, and I hate to even insinuate, you know, bring this up, but I don't know if they're using that a little bit. I mean, it won't be the first, you know, entity to use a crisis to their advantage, meaning they've already said more games means we lose more money. So it's quite the nice coincidence that you have to worry about a second wave at the same time that you want to play less games, mm-hmm. right? Because the agreement in late March says they won't play as many games as possible. And certainly the players have an argument to, like, wait a minute. Shouldn't everybody want to play more games? Isn't that what we're here for, to play as close to 162 as we can? So it is convenient that they can use that second wave. But on the other hand, my son's about to go to college. His fall semester might end in November and not start it. He may not start again until February, if he even goes, by the way. Heck of a high school graduation he's at. So, so obviously there is that second wave out there, but it's pretty convenient that, hey, there might be a second wave. And by the way, we want to play less games. So it's baked into the process, but I don't know where that falls. And is November 10 times worse than October for a second wave? Is that the prediction here? I mean, I guess it is from the medical experts, but, you know, there's a lot out there that is murky, and we don't know what's right and what's not. And frankly, the medical experts don't know what's going to happen either.
Jesse, we had the chance to talk to Buster Olney about the state of affairs with baseball and where the owners are at and where the players are at. And one of the concerns that he brought up from the players' side is the impact that a shortened season could have on guys that are trying to get paid next offseason, in terms of not only dealing with the risk of injury, transmission of the virus, but also with their statistics not being what they have been in prior years because you have a smaller sample size. Is that a real concern that you're hearing about?
Yeah, I mean, it is. And I wrote that in my piece today. And I also wrote that, okay, your stats shouldn't prevent you. Look at where the country is right now, right? I mean, my God, if you're worried about your stats in a 40 to 50 game season, that shouldn't prevent you from playing. Because remember, the guy that hits 400 in a shortened season should be rewarded as well. So my point is, it's a concern. It's not the overriding concern. It's another, in the column of why we shouldn't play a short season. You know, 40 games, how can anybody prove anything? Now we got to go to arbitration and free agency. So it's just another reason the players don't want to play. It's just baseball's not meant for a small sample size. So I wouldn't say it's the deciding factor, but it's something that's come up in talking to players over the last couple of days.
Jesse Rogers helping us break down Major League Baseball and the potential hopeful return here on 98.7 ESPN. I ask this question a lot, and it feels so relevant consistently, and that is, when is the day where we have to know by? I mean, do we have to have an answer in June of when a potential return is going to come back? Are we 10 days away? And, of course, it's nothing that is finite, but in your mind, like when is a drop-dead day? If we really have to know by now, by this day, to be able to have baseball this season.
Right. I've heard a date, but I don't know why it's the date. So take it for what it's worth. I've heard June 15th is a day that really is kind of some harder deadline than we've seen. I don't know why, though. It's something baked into this whole thing. Maybe it just comes down to the schedule and travel, you know, the normal reasons. So maybe we do have two more weeks before they really have to make a decision. And in some sense that works. Like, okay, if let's say it happens on June 15th. Okay, another week to get, but obviously if it's June 15th, they're not playing 100 games. So it also, you know, the longer it goes, the less games they
sure.
can play. But I've just kind of randomly heard that date, which is probably a little bit later than we all just assumed. But if they want to get anything in, I think that's the latest date. So let's just say it's anywhere between now and then.
Jesse Rogers joins us here in the show. Jesse, last one for me. You know, Kristen mentioned we had Buster Olney on the show, and I've heard Jeff Passan speak on this as well. Mentioned that he's heard, you know, up to six, maybe even eight owners would prefer to just not even have a season. They would lose less money not having a season. Have you heard that same thing?
Yes, I have. And, no one has reported which owners necessarily, and I hope if someone reports that, they have it nailed down, because that is a very heavy accusation to make. I mean, there's obviously some truth to it, because if they're saying the less games we play, the better, then zero would be best for them. So I think there, here's the way I'll put it. I think there are owners that are not going to go to the mat to play a season, right? Mm-hmm. Like you normally might think. I think there are owners like, yes, we want to play, because look, they're going to have to furlough their entire front office if they don't play. I mean, they're going to furlough a lot of people anyway. They're already doing it. If they don't play, PR staffs, salespeople, ticket people, I mean, do they? I just want to believe that these owners don't want to do that, but I don't think it's keeping them up at night. If they're, I don't think they're losing sleep over not having a season, a certain amount of them. I mean, the Cubs, where again, I'm in Chicago. I cover them. I've covered them for years. I mean, they're going to lose money either way. So I guess it's just which way, how much more are they going to lose if they play compared to if they don't play, and all that stuff. So, yeah, I think at the end of the day, our guys would throw up their hands. Okay, we don't play. We don't play. We'll figure it out. But I think it's detrimental harm to their organizations, and certainly furloughing all those employees. That can't be a good feeling. I mean, these aren't players which owners rarely even see making. I mean, these are some, you know, secretarial type people and office workers that make, you know, normal money, you know. So I just want to believe that these owners don't want to do that. Of course, if they just, you know, dig into their own wallets, they probably wouldn't have to. But, you know, a lot of owners aren't going to do that.
Jesse, you began this spot by saying you believe that something's going to get done. You're optimistic because of the alternative, which is the nuclear option, and not having baseball would just be so detrimental to the sport. But I want to ask you this. How confident are you that we're going to have some baseball season this year?
I mean, I'm over 50%, but I don't know how much over. So, you know, 51, 60%. I'm in that range. I'm not yet to say it's the underdog option. I think it's still the option. Look, remember a few weeks ago, the owners leaked this revenue sharing thing. They didn't present that as a proposal. They already came off of that. Now we've gone from 82 to 114 to 40 to 50 games. Like, they're starting to talk. There's movement. So one group has mentioned deferrals. Like, this is what happens. The other day I talked to an executive with a team. He said, you know, two things are true. There is acrimony, but we're also early in the negotiation with both when both sides take their extremes. Now, it has to move quickly because it doesn't feel early, but it was only a week ago the first proposal came out. So I'm more than 50% that slowly but surely they'll whittle it down. Probably a month ago, I was probably in the 90% range. I'm probably below that, though.
Well, you're not heading in the right direction then.
Right, exactly. Exactly. It's come down, but it's still the favored option for me, at least. And some of it's just hope because I don't have that, you know, compromise in front of me. And again, many agents themselves don't see it. But I think it's there. I will say from the beginning, I thought it'd be an 11th hour deal. And it's very much looking like that's what it'll be.
All right, Jesse, listen, we appreciate a couple minutes. Stay healthy, stay safe. And, you know, as this moves down the road with the return and hopeful return of Major League Baseball, we'd love to have you on again.
I would love to. You know, like I said, I cover the Cubs. We were going to come to New York twice this summer, the Yankees and the Mets. It would have been a lot of fun. But obviously there are bigger issues in this country. Baseball would be a nice distraction for sure.
It certainly would. Good stuff. We appreciate it.
Take care, guys.
All right. Excellent. I got to tell you, we have some terrific baseball coverage on the station.
Yeah, dialed in. You know what I thought was interesting? Oh. What he said, which I think is, I mean, when you start looking at, I'm sitting here looking at the numbers from all the different, you know, leaked proposals, if they're actually proposals and everything else. I mean, the number he brought up with the Braves, 60%, just over 60% is gate, and you know that's the, you know, the majority of their revenue.
Mm-hmm.
It almost feels like at some point when this thing kind of really, like, the urgency is pumped up, doesn't it feel like we're going to somewhere, it's going to be like 82 games at 40% of their salaries?
Doesn't,
like,
that
40%
sound
number?
Somewhat fair. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you guys disagree. Like, doesn't that sound just off the top like a somewhat fair compromise?
It's hard for me to say that, Dave, because you're talking about billionaire owners. If anybody was in position to shoulder the financial burden of this pandemic, it would be them. And you heard Jesse just say it. I mean, they can take out loans against their clubs. They can use the instrument of salary deferrals. There are a lot of options that they have at their disposal to mitigate the impact that this is going to have on the economics of the sport this season. I mean, if you're talking about trying to have a return to baseball, the players are the employees. The owners hold all the cards. It just feels like they could be the ones to set the stage for a return if they weren't so hell-bent on making sure they do what's in the absolute best interest of their bottom line.
But this is what they do, Chris. You know this. I mean, they beat us over the head until finally we get to the point where we, you know, the players will look at the 40% and say, oh, we actually won this deal. And then you realize, no, we didn't. They got exactly what they wanted, and we're back playing. And that's kind of how it feels at this point.
Yeah, I guess for me, Rick, I don't understand what's wrong with the baseball teams not making any money this year. What's wrong with your club operating, you know, without making a profit? I just don't understand why you can't take that position, especially when you've been the ones to benefit from the resurgence of the sport over the last decade and baseball advanced media and all the new revenue streams that the owners have come up with in recent years. I just don't understand why they can't bite the bullet this one time with an unprecedented circumstance and make sure that everybody else be as close to whole as humanly possible. I don't understand that.
I think part of it's the timing. I think the timing of this. I think the fact that this is, I mean, after next season, they're going to have to renegotiate the CBA. And they don't feel like this is the time to start showing weakness now.
Yeah, you're right about it. I get it.
I just
don't
like
it. Maybe I do understand it, Rick. I just don't like it. That's what it is. That's what it comes
down to. Because we never
liked it. I understand exactly what you're saying. I just
don't like
it.
Because, Chris, we never liked it. At the time when we're doing it, all the hours, just think of all the hours you put in negotiating CBAs. And then, you know, just trying to get, like, the scraps, like anything you can get. And finally, when the thing is signed, you're like, oh, we did pretty good. And then a year later, realized, no, we didn't.
No, we didn't.
You're right. We didn't do good at all.
No, we didn't. No, we didn't.
Feels good at the time, though.
Well, yeah, because you get beaten down to the point because they just keep making you realize as the process goes on and on that they're billionaires and you're not. They own the teams and you don't. So, I mean, they have the ultimate leverage. I mean, the teams could legitimately look you in the face and say, and I told you I had an owner say this, we make more money by not playing. How do you argue that? If that's the truth, how do you fight that?
No. I mean, if a guy's willing, if he makes more money by not playing, then I mean, he can't be beaten.
Exactly right.
You know?
So you just take what you can get. And then by the end of it, you feel like you got enough of these little things to make you feel like you won.
Yeah.
And then you realize, no, you don't. It's terrible. So I get my own hotel room. Sweet. Until you see that first check and they got 13% of your money taken out for escrow.
Ooh.
I'll buy my own hotel room. Give me the 13%. I'll get my own hotel room.
Have you turned your man cave into your home office? Well, here's your chance to upgrade your work-at-home experience with an Amazon Echo. To enter, email a photo of your work-from-home setup to 98.7 FM at ESPN.com with the subject line Echo. That's E-C-H-O. Include your name and phone number. Again, that's 98.7 FM at ESPN.com. Our winner for today, Michael Galasso from Flemington, New Jersey. Congratulations to Michael. Make sure you're tuned into our show, Bart and Han, and the Michael K Show through Thursday to hear if you've won. To listen on your smart speakers, all you have to do is say, play 98.7 ESPN. That's it. It's so easy.
And you only have to say it once.
Hopefully.
Because it'll listen to you and then just it'll know. Just it'll guess. Because it's always listening to everything you say.
It wants to know what's going on. It's like a good friend.
Oh, yeah, that's what it is.
Yes.
It's the good friend.
It's like therapy without having to pay the copay is what it is. it's a listening therapist that when you think of something or want something, it's there for you. Look at the positive side of things.
Yeah, I'm positive that it's spying on you.
All right. We took off yesterday were you ready today? You got some good stories for observations, I'm sure.
Yeah, I got some good stories. Nice and tidy, though. Nice and tidy.
Yes, very, very brief, quick, rapid-fire, Santy, if you will.
Do you need to feel better about your life?
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
And totally redeem yourself!
Let's take a look at Rick's Knobservation.
Welcome back, dum-dum.
All right, fellas, here we go. It is Tuesday. We're going to start off with some good news. Just so you guys know, you'll be proud that myself and one Ella DiPietro were victorious last night in the DiPietro family America's Got Talent.
Nice.
Now, do you guys put on a show? How does this work exactly?
It was multiple shows. I thought it was going to be one show, and it turned into probably, I would say, 12 shows. But when all was said and done, our rendition of Into the Unknown, we did a beautiful dance.
Now, who votes on this?
This was Cass, and Milo was one of the judges. We had a fake Simon Cowell, was also a judge. We got the golden buzzer, which means you just right to the finals.
Now, who are you competing against, though?
We went off against Milo, had a couple performances.
Uh-huh.
Cass did not participate. She did more judging. She wasn't really interested in dancing. But we did a modern dance to Into the Unknown.
I take it that was fantastic. Ella's idea?
Yeah. Ella's idea. Okay. A lot of lifts. She sold it, though. I'll give her credit. She sold it. Very emotional. Very, very emotional.
It's nice. For her.
So that was nice. Big win for us. Pretty proud. Sure we'll be doing it again tonight. Here we go. We'll start with an update. We haven't talked about this in a long time. This is a new story, by the way, just so you guys know. This is a new story. This is an update. Joe Exotic, Carole Baskin. Remember that?
Sure.
Back and forth. Here's the update. A federal judge has ruled that Carole Baskin's Big Cat Rescue is now in control of one Joe Exotic's park.
Wow.
So she now has the Oklahoma park in addition to her own park in Florida.
You better believe it. Wow. Turns out that the property was fraudulently transferred years ago to Joe Exotic's mom. And because he had to pay Carole Baskin the $1 million trademark judgment, now the property goes over to Carole Baskin.
Wow.
So
good for her.
Good sound, Raymond. Ultimately, it looks like she has won.
Did you see the story?
Wait.
I think it was yesterday where it was, and I don't even know where. You guys might even know. Santiago probably knows. Like a zoo tweeted, we have a lion on the loose that we can't account for.
I did see that, Dave.
And then half an hour later, Chris, they came out with, no, we found him. Everyone is accounted for.
When you can't account for a lion, I think you got a problem.
That's all we need.
Goodness.
That's all we need. Can you imagine? I mean, it wouldn't even feel that weird. Like if you were walking down the street and you just walked by a lion, like you'd be like, yes, that is 2020.
Yes.
At this point? No.
Yes.
I mean, did you follow Rex Chabon?
Yes.
Did you see his tweet about 2020 and it was the burning truck just rolling down the street?
He did.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable, man. I want out. Give me to January 1st, please.
Well, we're happy.
Here we go. Did this happen in Florida? Too quick. Did this happen in Florida stories? First one, really quick. Man was arrested after reports that he was actually mowing other people's lawns that weren't his when asked to stop. What did this man do? Did he stop? No, he didn't. He decided that he was going to pull down his pants and moon the person whose yard it was.
I got to tell you, I wouldn't call the police on him.
Yeah, I was sitting there wondering, why would you call the police if he's mowing your lawn for you?
There are certain lawns you're not supposed to mow. I think this is an actual lawn. And, yeah, I would agree with you. If he's mowing your lawn and you don't have to pay him and he's just doing it because he wants to, just let him be.
I'm not going to get in his way. Go ahead.
No, just let him be.
By all means, less work for me.
In fact, if you want to pull your pants down while you do it, I'm even comfortable with that. Just, if you want to mow my leg, just mow my lawn. Please, sir.
Could be a new service.
I can put the weed whacker out for you, too, while we're at it. Yeah. I'll put that out there.
No, that's dangerous. No pants, the weed whacker could get dangerous.
Yeah. Have you
seen? Doesn't sound like a good combination.
His tentacles?
No, that's not a good.
Doesn't sound like an appropriate conversation.
Was that Florida, boys?
Boy, I'm flummoxed here. I'm going to say no. But I'm not sure why I'm going to head in the direction of no. It just again, it feels like everywhere is Florida, so I'm gonna say no to that.
Yeah, I get where you're coming from, Dave. I understand it. But for some reason, I usually follow you because you've been on fire lately, but I feel like this is one of those where your radar is a little bit off.
I'm hesitant. Like, I'll admit to you, be as honest as I can, I have no confidence in this answer.
Yeah, so I'm going to go with Florida. I'm going to say that did happen in Florida.
Wow, Santiago, do you believe this happened in Florida?
In full disclosure, I did send this, but I can't remember whether it is. No, I honestly can't remember whether or not it actually did happen in Florida. I'm going to ride
with
Chris.
This is the attention to detail we're looking for on the show.
No. I purposely didn't research it, like, look really into it to say, hey, I'm not going to look. So I think it was Florida, but I'm not 100% sure, but I think it was.
You would be correct. I was trying to set you up for a correct answer. Dave is on a cold streak right now. I think that's two in a row he's got wrong.
I missed one.
Yeah, but usually, I mean, you get every single one right. That's Jacksonville. That was Jacksonville, Florida. Yeah.
And how do you send him the story and not know the answer?
That's a great question.
Because I knew I would be asked. So I said, let me not make a thing about
this. So you wanted to be a man of integrity, Santy.
Because Dave is such a baby about these sort of things.
How am I a baby?
You would like to call me out about certain things, so I'm making sure that I'm not giving
you
a reason to call me out.
Here's what happened. He read it. He conveniently forgot, yet he got it right. So you do the math.
It's 50-50.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's kind of like doing the same thing you do with the Google GIMP on Stump Rothenberg.
It's a good point.
I don't need to prove myself. You know, tomorrow morning when Andy from Merrick calls and asks your question, I'll let you flounder on your own. I'm not going to get involved.
Yeah, I don't have a problem floundering, Dave, because I've accepted that my mind doesn't work like yours. Nobody's really does.
When cousin Andy Rothenberg calls from Merrick after already calling Dave the night before,
right? Discuss.
You don't believe that though.
No, I don't.
Joke. You don't believe that I'm cheating. You don't believe that.
No, I don't. It's a beautiful mind. And here's the other thing. I will stand up for Ray Santiago. He's doing a lot. He's answering phones and everything else. You don't have to read into the story. The story starts, mooning mower facing charge. That's all you need. Like, you're going to send that immediately. You don't have to read where it happened.
Yeah. Great point.
It's a mooning mower. That's an observation. Here we go. This is the, I got two more stories. This is the last. Did it happen in Florida? A man is facing drug charges after police said he told them, get ready for this, that he was attempting to create a healthy meth substance. A healthy meth substance. What would make his meth healthy? Because there's acai berries in it.
Oh my gosh, talk about oxymorons.
Just straight
moron. We got this fat-free meth we're pitching you.
Oh, exactly. My God.
This is fat-free, sugar-free meth with the side berries.
Vegan-friendly meth we're talking about.
Oh, that is priceless. Now, I feel like that's not Florida, and I feel like that – I'll tell you why. That there are places in this country legalizing drugs. Not meth, obviously, but drugs. And I think it's probably an area where drugs is already kind of – look to the side, and I will go with an area like that. So I'm going to say not Florida.
This guy clearly watches too much Shark Tank.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one.
How can I make this meth better?
It's healthy. Healthy
it's
meth.
Well, Candy, what do you think? Florida?
I'm riding with Dave on this one, not Florida.
How about you, Santy? You're a big health freak.
That's got Breaking Bad all over it. It's somewhere in the Midwest.
Oh, look at you guys. All right. That is Colorado.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a Colorado man.
That's about right.
All right. Let's finish up with this. Did this happen in my backyard? Yes, it did. I hope he's listening to the show right now because I'd like to punch him right in the face. That is the guy who cuts the bushes in my backyard. Let's face it.
He doesn't do it with his pants down at his ankles, does he?
No, I would hope not. Although, I mean, when I tell you this story, I would imagine he probably wears some kind of protection because he's really not good at what he does. So yesterday I go downstairs after the show and I hear this loud noise. And I'm like, what the hell is that noise? I'm like, Cass, do you hear something? She's like, no, I don't hear anything. So I walk outside in the backyard and look to my left and there is a geyser shooting out of the bushes. The geyser, the water, like a thick stream of water going straight up in the air and then pounding down against the bushes in the cement. So I said, Cass, what are we doing here? She goes, what? She comes out. Apparently, now I don't, again, I was going to mulch, still may, not doing it, but I'm not cutting bushes. I'm not qualified. He's not paying attention, takes the device that he's cutting bushes with and completely cuts the bush, not realizing that there's a sprinkler that goes straight up through the bush.
Oh, my God. So he cut the sprinkler, and now it's just flowing out.
Cut the sprinkler in half and didn't even realize it.
How could he not realize it, though?
That's a great question.
Honestly, I can understand the mistake. It's a bad mistake, but it's a mistake. But are you so unaware of your surroundings that you have water pouring out and you have no idea?
No idea. I don't know. No, I don't know. I don't think the sprinkler was on at the time. He comes over and Cass is like, are you serious? Like, you didn't realize that you cut the sprinkler? He goes, oh, you know what? Now that I think about it, this side is getting too much. We should probably just cap it anyway.
Yeah, so rather than go through the work of trying to replace it, I'm just going to cap it. You guys aren't going to miss anything.
I actually did you a favor.
So you're looking for a landscaper is what we're saying?
I would say so at this point, yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. But didn't give you guys a heads up, though. Didn't even think to... Wow.
I don't think he realized
he
did it. I don't think he realized he did it.
Wow.
I think he was in just such a rush to get it done that he just sawed right through it. And that was it.
Not a good job by him. Not a good job at all.
Terrible job.
Terrible, terrible job. All right.
There you go.
That's it.
No observations. Done.
All right. Nice. Nice to have it back. Of course, following us is going to be Bart and Han at 1 o'clock. They'll take you until 2:55. And that's when the K-Show festivities begin. Greg Schiano, the head coach, once of Rutgers, now of Rutgers again, will join the program at 5:30, which I think, Rick, might cause a little animosity with Chris Carlin, because isn't Schiano a Carlin guy?
Yeah, but I think Carlin's already had Schiano. I mean, it's the K-Show. I mean,
it's a big show, but I'm just questioning whether that causes divide between those two.
No. Carlin loves them. They love Carlin.
Okay.
Rick, you see what Dave's trying to do, right?
I know exactly
what he's trying to do. He's trying to create dissension within the other shows because we're not getting the guests that he thinks we should have.
I'm merely bringing up conversation. If honest, thought-provoking conversation is not what we're allowed to do here, then, I mean, this is what I'm doing. Larry Hardesty, 10 o'clock tonight. And then, of course, Gordon Damer at 5 o'clock in the morning into Golic and Wingo, and then we're going to be back with you. Boy, there's a lot going on now in the sports world, in the real world. I mean, this is, in your wildest imaginations, Chris, this is not what we anticipated for 2020. If I would have told you this 6 months ago, you would have had me committed.
No, it's not what we anticipated, Dave, and it's tragic what's been happening over the last 2 weeks. And really, what we've been going through the last 2 or 3 months with the coronavirus to compound the issues that we're dealing with right now with racism in this country. It's just, it's all terrible. But Dave, I will say this, when it comes to fighting racism in this country, we have to organize and we have to be strategic in how we attack it, because racism has been around since this inception of this country and it's not going to go away easily. And so we have to make sure that we all come together and try to figure out the best way to affect the change that we want to see. And I think we have to get past the retreating to separate corners, and we've got to get to the point where we're able to come together and hear one another in order to come up with solutions.
I think a first step and a big one is that a lot of athletes, and this is our world, this is our wheelhouse, a lot of athletes have come out and taken a strong stance and said it's not okay and change needs to happen. And again, you've heard from a lot of activists and people that know better than I do. They say it can't be a conversation today. It needs to be conversation, Rick, that continues in the future so that the real change does come from this.
Yeah, it's the longevity of the conversation.
Right.
I mean, this is something that just can't last a couple of days. I mean, this is something that has to continue, and it's not going to be easy. It's going to be uncomfortable, and there's no easy solution to it. But it's up to us to have those conversations, to do our part, to influence our, I mean, the first step is to influence our inner circles. I mean, influence the ones that you're closest to first. And then if everyone tries to do that, then, you know, that's a start.
And one thing I also want to throw out there, guys, we also got to hold our elected officials accountable. And that's why I want to encourage everybody that's in my sphere of influence to make sure you're registered to vote. Because there's no better time to hold elected officials accountable than in an election year. So that's important. We got to make our voices heard, not just in the streets with protests and demonstrations, but also at the ballot boxes.
Yes. And that's, continues throughout this year and, of course, culminates on November the 3rd. So obviously big, big, important stuff in an important year. And you got an important day. You're going shopping at some point later today.
No, not later today. Yeah, like immediately following the show. Yeah.
So how does it work now? Are you like scrubbed down and you? Here's what I envision: that it's like a doctor going into surgery, like you're scrubbed down, and then you have someone help you into hazmat suit. You touch nothing. You go right into the store, get that done, get out, and then just towel off.
No, don't just towel off. No, it's the opposite. So I'll gear up, hazmat suit, hat, glasses, mask, all of it, certain outfit. Then come back, unload, wipe down, and then that's when the whole process begins.
And I feel like it's soap. Like a silkwood kind of shower.
Oh, I mean, if she could, she would just hose me off in the driveways, which she would do.
Like a dog.
Yeah, and I got like special soap and everything else. Like special disinfectant soap. And my skin is just falling off. I look like a toxic Avenger at this point. Like Fire Marshal Bill. Let me show you something. But this is, I mean, this is it. And what's sad to me though, I mean, it's just one sad thing ever. I used to love, I know Chris feels the same way. I used to love grocery shopping. Like, love it.
Mm-hmm. You loved it?
I love grocery shopping. Float around, try to decide what I want to make, check out the produce, try to find the ripest cantaloupe, diddle with the melons a little bit, find out which one I like. Not like nothing. I'm in a rush.
See, I love what grocery shopping led to, which was me eating good.
Yes.
I don't know if I never particularly liked going to the grocery store.
And don't think diddling with the melons went unheard.
I want a ripe melon.
Great conversation.
There's nothing worse than cutting into a beautiful honeydew or a cantaloupe, and it's not ripe.
Oh,
it's the worst.
A beautiful ripe honeydew is as good as it gets.
DiPietro, Canty, and Rothenberg. Weekdays at 10 on 98.7 ESPN.